Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Musical Splaining Podcast. I am your host and fairy godfather, Kaveh Taharian.
And I am just a smelly old shoe, Angelina Meehan, left abandoned on the stairs.
And today we are joined by a very special guest.
Yes.
You've heard her on the podcast before. She's a writer. She's a video essayist. She's a lovely human being. But most importantly, she is a fan of our girl, Carmela, and loves to wear her t-shirts. Everybody,
yes.
Please welcome Princess Weeks.
Yay! Hello, I am your good stepsister in this bad Cinderella story.
Oh, that's a good way to tie this back in. Yeah, bad Cinderella. So so excited to have you on for this episode because this is going to be a little bit of a different format for this episode because Princess and I have already seen Bad Cinderella.
Recently. Yeah, you guys were talking about it, so I was like, I need to book the first flight out to New York to immediately see Bad Cinderella.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like... I wish because Tony Doms came out today and Bad Cinderella got a whopping 0 Tony nominations. As we are recording this literally happened this morning.
Yes. And
I wish that we had recorded this part of the episode first because you saying I'm literally going to fly out to take the first flight to New York to go see Bad Cinderella is such like a good sting to have on a poster or an ad. And now the really useful group's not going to get that. And that's tragic.
Yeah. It's honestly so sad for them that they cannot use us to promote their bad musical.
I think they're probably going to use us as like their reason for why it wasn't doing as well is because we loved it. Or I guess you guys did love it. I guess I will have to see if I love it, which it sounds like it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm very excited for you to see this show. I'm glad you're at least seeing it with, your wife so you don't have to see it alone because I can't begin to imagine what that experience feels like. As someone who has watched a lot of bad shows by myself.
This was like one of those things that was such a quick conversation too, because we were just sort of like, I ended up having to come out east just like very kind of like on short notice. And we're just like, well, I should see a couple of shows where I'm out there. And it was immediately like Bad Cinderella. We should see this. People will love it. It'll be a great episode. Like no problems. And everyone was laughing and everyone's been giggling, talking about it.
1,000%. I will say this. Cause we saw it. It was when I went out to New York to go see the final show of Phantom of the Opera. And I was there for the whole weekend and it was like last minute. And the only reason I was convinced to go see it was that tickets were $30. And it was like a group of seven or eight of us, seven people. And it was $210 for seven tickets. And that is like, when you think about that, I feel bad for the cast and crew and the artistic team and everything, but also just like, I'll see Bad Cinderella for $30. And
listen, it's a musical for the people that typical working class person can afford it.
It's our Bad Cinderella. Yeah. It's so funny because putting it into numerical form. So I went to go see a week before I saw Bad Cinderella. I saw Anne Juliet, which now has 9 Tony nominations.
Yes. Right.
And it was like tickets for that were like, I was in the second row and it was like almost like over $200 for that
seat.
So it just shows you that the quality is qualitying. But let me know when you go, Kaveh. I'll definitely get you post Bad Cinderella drinks and hang out with you and your wife.
All right.
See, now I'm just like, no, I got to find a way. It's going to be my grandma's 90th birthday on the day that you're seeing Bad Cinderella. And I can't
You should surprise her with tickets to Bad Cinderella.
Yeah. It's like, hey, grandma, I know you've lived nine decades, not centuries. I love her.
I'd live to see the day.
But then we're going to go see Bad Cinderella. My family's planning this nice big party for you, but it doesn't matter because Bad Cinderella is happening. I think she would really like that.
Which is also what I keep thinking about. I keep hearing in my head, like, this isn't your grandmother, Cinderella.
Cinderella. No, it is certainly not that. I will say this. I have not stopped thinking about it since I saw it. And I saw this again, literally the day after I saw the last public show of Phantom of the Opera, which was highly emotional and charged and vivid to me. But in the same way, so is this. I keep revisiting it in my head going, am I crazy or did I just get Bad Cinderella'd?
Andrew Lloyd Webber has that effect on you.
He truly does.
Let's go ahead and get into the notes.
Let's get into the notes.
Bad Cinderella, originally titled Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cinderella. Interesting that he swapped out Andrew Lloyd Webber for bad. He's like bad to the bone. That's also how I imagine this starting, is Cinderella coming out and just
if
bad
only
to the bone.
It was that hardcore.
Oh my god,
only.
It's a stage musical with music by Lloyd Webber, lyrics by David Zappel, and book by Emerald Fennell. It is loosely based on the fairy tale of the same name. Bad Cinderella opens in the land of Belleville. Do you guys remember Triplets of Belleville? Is that
yes, I do. Yes, exactly. It's a mashup with Triplets of Belleville. It's really high culture art stuff. Oh, what a bop. It's not
I hope they make a guest appearance. Fair enough. Okay. Belleville, a kingdom where everyone from the queen to her son, Prince Charming, down to the neighbor baker, prioritizes being as physically attractive as humanly possible. This is just L.A. Save for two people. Save for two people, the defiant rebel servant girl Cinderella and Prince Charming's awkward and shy younger brother Prince Sebastian, both of whom privately bond over their shared disdain of the shallow kingdom and secretly love each other. Oh boy. Unfortunately, the much adored
every time they would say his name, Sebastian, I'd be like, Ignatius, Christatius, Sebastian.
If only there was the Cinderella. It's not that Cinderella. It's bad Cinderella.
It's bad Cinderella. Unfortunately, the much adored and insanely hot Prince Charming has gone missing and presumed dead, leaving Belleville without its haughty heir apparent. In a bid to keep the kingdom stable and to make a proper king out of Prince Sebastian, the queen decides to throw a ball so that her dorky second son can pick the hottest wife in the land and become legitimized to the throne. Will Cinderella be able to outmaneuver her bitchy stepmother and spoiled stepsisters who are also gunning for chance with Prince Sebastian and marry her bookish prince? What exactly happened to Prince Charming, and how could anyone possibly be hot enough to merit all of this adoration? And what exactly is so bad about Cinderella anyway? All of this and more in Bad Cinderella.
She's bad.
Wow.
She's bad.
If only that synopsis was as good as the show, we could have really had it at least like a full season of Once Upon a Time. But yeah. Instead.
No, that's literally Nope.
Bad Cinderella. Then simply Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cinderella was first workshopped in London in 2019 under the direction of Lawrence Connor, who previously collaborated with Lloyd Webber on his musical version of School of Rock. While slated to open in August 2020, the show was forced to delay its debut, or debut as I like to say, for nearly an entire year, debut, because of COVID-19. When it opened for previews in June 2021, it was with an audience of 50% capacity and ultimately forced to delay its opening night in July when a cast member tested positive for COVID just days before. But you know what? It keeps trucking, which I admire.
It keeps going, yeah. You can't put Bad Cinderella down. She's going.
Can't.
She's going places.
After finally having its first official performance on August 18th, Bad Cinderella was forced to close the following June. Amongst the scandal that many members of the cast and crew did not find out about the closing until after it had been announced to the public. Oh, that sucks. Unbothered by this failure, Lloyd Webber and the rest of the creative team pushed to bring it to Broadway, albeit with a completely revamped production design and edgier title. Bad Cinderella opened on March 23rd at the Imperial Theater, where it is currently playing, and God help us all.
Yes.
God. Wow.
God
if
help
I
us
was
all.
Emerald Fennell and I had the same Oscar that Emma Thompson has.
Right.
And then I was attached to this monstrosity.
Yeah.
I would really have to think about my life choices, because like the marketing for this movie and all of the behind the scenes interviews of it, I feel like I'm in the worst version of Disney feminist Tumblr.
Yes.
Like,
oh, no.
The most dark-sided version
this is,
of that. And I shake in fear.
It's very 2014, 2015. Like, here's what Disney princesses would look like if you took them to, like, psychoanalytic therapy. You know, like, that sort of thing. Like, it has that stink. It has... It's like that meets like the Descendants meets like, I don't know, a bad YA, not a bad YA novel, just a boring YA. I don't know. It's not without its merits. There are things that I did like about this show, but
I mean, it's a bad Cinderella. That's the ultimate merit of it, right? It's like not your grandmother's Cinderella.
Exactly. Yeah. Like there are not things, and we will talk about this more in the second half, that I did enjoy about it. Again, I think dollar for dollar for $30, I got some entertainment heft out of it. But yeah, like, so Emerald Fennell, if you were in the audience and you don't know, she was the director and screenwriter for Promising Young Woman, which is what she won her Oscar for, right? Correct me nice. If I'm wrong here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, for original screenplay, I think it was, yeah.
Right, yeah. And she was also a showrunner for Killing Eve. And so, like, she's got actual, like, weight under her belt in terms of, these are some bona fides. This woman is capable of telling a story. She was also Camilla Parker Bowles on The Crown. So she knows how to tell a story. And the story that emerges here is, like, one of those things where I can't... I don't know if it's because nobody knows how to say no to Andrew Lloyd Webber and how much of it is his creative input, you know, because as we've seen, Love Never Dies is a story of people not knowing how to tell Andrew Lloyd Webber no and just kind of going with like every idea that sounds good. And I have a feeling this is kind of a similar situation. I wasn't like a huge fan of Promising Young Woman. I do like Killing Eve a lot.
Me neither.
But like, like she knows how to tell a story. And like, this is not that. I will just say that. So it's a very,
yeah,
it's a very detached and weird story. That's like my biggest criticism of it, honestly, but we will get into that later. But that said, yeah, Bad Cinderella. Yeah. And it's just weird. Like a lot of people, especially in the Phantom, in the Phantom community, as I speak as their ambassador, we're just also kind of like, why is this show closing and Bad Cinderella's opening? You know, there's a lot of like, I mean, outside of all the jokes from the general Broadway community in general and the whole hubbub of what happened with its closing night where Andrew Lloyd Webber got on stage and called Bad Cinderella a costly mistake. And like,
oh,
yeah.
No.
Well, so
he talked shit about it itself. Okay.
He should give context.
It's literally a situation where it's like, as the Jedi grow weak, the Sith grow stronger. It definitely like, in addition to what you're saying about like how it feels like no one said no to him, it also feels like he was very determined to make an adaptation of Cinderella when this is clearly like has nothing to do with the fairy tale of Cinderella.
Yeah.
Sans like two elements to it. And I feel it's because like every, like the most iconic version of like a traditional Cinderella musical is Rodgers and Hammerstein. And like, mm-hmm. when you watch this, all you can think of like, this is the B-sides of that, the B-sides of Into the Woods, the
right,
B-sides
right.
of like Ever After. There is nothing that makes my media literacy brain do a more than someone saying, you know what, we're going to finally make a feminist version of Cinderella. And I'm just like, wow, you in the year 2023 had a radical idea of how can we empower Cinderella? Like Disney's already put her on a horse in the third sequel of that movie. Like there's just a very lack of understanding about like what Cinderella's morals are supposed to be about. Because even when you're describing like the whole like town, it's the hottie town. I'm like, nothing about Cinderella is like, this is the land of hotties.
Yeah, like looks are not really like a thing. Yeah, like to go back to what you're saying, like Cinderella is no stranger to musical theater. There's like, you know, between the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, the Disney movie, the Into the Woods, where she's a prominent character, you know, and then some and then some. Like this story has been told 8,000 times. And I will watch every single one of them because I'm a big Cinderella fan.
I'm going to ask, what does you guys still love about Cinderella specifically as a story?
For me, what I like about it, and a lot of this is especially like kind of examining myself in my 30s and my 20s, but like you're told kind of growing up, especially like when I grew, like as I was hitting my 20s and being like, I'm an independent woman and blah, 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 that Cinderella is like inherently anti-feminist and that she's waiting to be saved. And this is not a, and I, you know, there are iterations of the story that I guess lean into that. But for the most part, this is about somebody trying to survive and somebody who, like, as far as I can tell from like the Rodgers and Hammerstein version, even the Disney version and Into the Woods, just wants to have a night to herself and to, you know, get to live as she feels she deserves to live. And so I think that is a really interesting, like, base story to tell that you can do a lot with. So, like, I am always down for a Cinderella story. And I feel bad that it has a bad rep.
Everything that Angie said. Also, I love a gown. I love a costume
yeah,
change.
Yeah, I also do love a. I love a dress.
I love a dress. I love, and I think this is partly because of Ever After. I love the sad momminess. I love the whole deal. Like, stepmother, why can't you love me? And she's like, because I don't want to. And it's like every time it's like emotion. It's a very like emotional story, and when it's told well, it can be like a really great examination of like class and blah 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 blah. But when it's just told in like a good, satisfying way, it can just be a fun wish fulfillment story. And so when you have an adaptation like this that clearly doesn't understand how it works on either of those things, it's like Cinderella is an abused kid who like is an indentured servant in white slavery to her own family members in her own house. And then she's like, you know what? Today I'm going out. I'm going to be a latchkey kid. It's like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. It's like Miss Pettigrew lives for a day here. Like let her have this moment. And how this version tackles it. How do you think like a, you know, 75 plus something man tackles Cinderella?
Listen,
you know?
If there's anybody to solve the problem of the problems that feminism is facing and to unite everyone, it's Andrew Lloyd Webber through the Bad Cinderella musical, I imagine. That's the person I would put in charge.
He took my favorite show that he wrote, and then he made the one girl character shoot the other girl character over some guy's dick. So I knew this was going to be a hit from the get-go.
This is going to be one that I have to have like a bunch of drinks going into it. It sounds like I can't go into a dead ass.
Well, like
sober.
I said, the wine is cheaper than the ticket itself. So, and yeah, I can't wait to talk about the actual experience itself because it was special. I mean, one, I was sitting right next to Princess the whole time, and we were
the whole time we're just
having
like
a ball. We're just having a ball.
I know,
but just the audience in general was an interesting experience, and then the show itself, man. But yeah, I guess the less said, the better to keep you as blind to it as we can.
Yeah, I'm just excited to put my feet up. It's going to be like being on an airplane where like you get an entire row to yourself. I feel like that's what it's going to be like at this show. Like,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the other interesting thing about like the whole discourse is like how Bad Cinderella fits into like the modern day musical zeitgeist anyway, where like the millennial musical, like the empowerment girl boss musical is like a really big thing. And like someone made a joke the other day, it's like everyone's like, capitalism will breed innovation. There are three different Britney Spears musicals out on right now, because it's like and Juliet has Beyonce has Britney Spears songs. Once Upon One More Time
is going to
be like another thing that's going to have all Britney Spears music. And then they're making a Britney Spears musical. So it's like, I feel like Andrew Lloyd is like, I could do Cinderella for the girls in the theys.
I love it.
And it's just like, they'll love it. And there's so many things about it that feel like it wants to do that.
Yeah,
but never opened a single book. And so like there's a lack of joyfulness, because even though I can agree that like Six isn't like a real musical in the sense that like it the songs are good and the vibes are good, but it probably doesn't really hold a lot of water as like a book. And like Anne Juliet, it's a very simplistic story, but you have a fun time. It knows exactly what it is and everyone's having a great time. With this, it's like painful to see people trying to give talent. And then it's just like, no, you're singing B-sides. You're really, it's not fun to watch unless it's really gay in that singular couple of moments. And then you're like, this could have been a contender.
Right. Without saying anything more, because like, I think.
Oh, yes.
That's the best experience. No more
let's not spoil too much. Let's go ahead. Or I guess I'm going to go. Apparently you guys aren't going to like, you know, rush to the theater to see it again. But I'm going to go watch it. We're going to come back and we're going to discuss Bad Cinderella wearing our new glass slippers, which I can only imagine are not going to be in it now. It's like going to be glass Crocs or something. That's more
conductor. She's going to be wearing glass Converse or something like that. Good luck.
Chuck Taylors.
Yeah, right. All right. And we'll see you after you've been badified.
The badification
of Cinderella.
He's gonna have a smoky eye when he comes back. It's gonna be like a smoky eye, like Hot Jafar in the Aladdin movie. It's like, all right.
Like, 80,000 hours. Not only is that how long every musical we have to watch feels to me, but it's also the average length of a career. That time is probably your biggest opportunity to make a positive impact on the world. But how do you even begin to navigate that? Lucky for you, today's episode is sponsored by 80,000 Hours, a nonprofit that aims to help people find a fulfilling career that does good too. If you're a young person, or even an old like me, you've probably heard a lot of career advice. Follow your passion. Do what you love. Start a musical podcast. It may all be well-intentioned, but it doesn't take into account the best available evidence we have for what actually makes for a high-impact and rewarding career. 80,000 Hours has a ton of resources to help you on that journey. Their website has loads of collected research on high-impact careers, a job board with current openings they think might help you have a positive impact, and even a podcast where they have conversations with experts about the world's most pressing problems. I personally really enjoyed the interview with AI expert Stuart Russell. Oh, and the best part? Everything is free. $3.99 forever. Because they're a nonprofit, and their only aim is to help solve global problems by helping people like you do the most good possible. If you go to 80,000hours.org/musicalsplaining, which, by the way, is 8 with 4 zeros behind it, you can sign up for a free copy of their in-depth career guide, which aims to help you learn new ideas for impactful paths and make a plan to put into action. Don't make the same mistakes as me. Don't start a musical podcast. Go get real guidance. Go to 80,000hours.org/musicalsplaining and head down a meaningful path to success.
And we're back.
And all the better for it. Mm-hmm. So, hi, everyone. Welcome to part 2.
I've been radicalized into being bad now. I used to be good, but now I'm bad.
Right. No, after there's like two periods of your life when Bette Cinderella is involved. Mm-hmm. And it's like the pre-Bette Cinderella part and the post-Bette Cinderella part. And now yes. I just, everything I walk around in town, I just see bad. Like I see a dog being walked. I'm like, that's a bad dog being walked. I walk past a car that is poorly parked. I'm like, that's a bad, poorly parked car. I walk past my Wawa. It's bad Wawa now.
Can't deal with it.
Yeah, bad Cinderella. So I should preface this by saying that in between recording parts of this,
it was announced. This is the crucial news that's mm-hmm, happened. Yes,
that bad Cinderella will in fact be enclosing in June, I believe. So soon. So I think it's June 2nd.
Just in the nick of time, I was able to see it. We were able to see this historic show.
Such history. June 4th. It's June 4th. Yes.
The day after my 40th birthday, by the way, which adds only more insult to injury, which I think is really funny.
Yeah, that is just for you. They were like, one musical dies on your birthday.
Yeah. You get one gift.
That's my evil laugh.
For everything that you have put up with. I mean, I am very sad for the cast and crew and house staff, but also, like I said, when we saw it, I think it was about at 70% capacity. And then as of closing last week, it dropped down to, I think, 55% capacity. So
when we saw it, like the entire mezzanine was like fucking, the central section of the mezzanine was completely empty.
That's where we saw it. Yeah. We got
tickets for like $30 on, not standby, what is it called? On Rush.
Yeah.
But it was like it seemed like more than half the theater was empty. It was really kind of sad.
I feel so bad for the performers. It's like, I can't imagine what that experience must be like to just show up to an empty room. It's like, cut my life into pieces.
I agree.
This is my last
truly.
Yeah, I actually wrote a note about this specifically too when I was watching it, where I was like, you know, I can say this specifically as a person who does creative work, where it's like, a lot of the times what makes you a professional is like, if you can do the job, even though you fucking hate it, or even though you know it's dog shit, right?
Right.
I don't obviously know like what the performers necessarily think, if they love it or if they hate it, but like I didn't necessarily get the sense that they were like upset to be there, and like to be able to do that like over and over again, as you said, even with an empty theater, is like, you know what, like we need to give them a round of applause regardless of how you feel about the show. Like that's fucking hard, especially when it's singing and putting mm-hmm. yourself out there and dancing around. It's like you're so vulnerable in that sense, and to still do it and do your best. Like, right, Jesus, absolutely. Man.
Especially, it's hard. Like, it's the closing with that, and then, like, the target that the show has had on its back. And, like, I have a lot of feelings about that, and I guess, like, we can get into it later, but, like, I did want to say, like, for as much as, like, people wanted this to be a disaster, I didn't find it to be a disaster. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was not very good, you know? Yeah. And, like, the way that people were coming after this show was very strange, considering what it ended up being. So I feel for the performers going on every day, doing this 8 times a week,
Jesus,
knowing that
know.
Like one, it's closing. Cause that's part crazy. Of being a professional mm-hmm. and doing the job. Same with the crew, same with like all of the front of house staff who come into this and
everybody.
Make this. And like, I will say like the woman running the snack bar was really nice and excited. All of this like staff, like seating people. And it's just like, thank you guys so much. That's a really hard job.
I think ultimately the only person who really showed their ass this whole time was Andrew Lloyd Webber. You know, like he just, from like just how he treated the London show to, you know, the fact that Phantom was closing right during this, so all of his energy was over there. It's like, you know, he had his own tragedies happen, of course, so I don't want to take away from that. But even before that was a factor,
I don't
feel like he was really giving the show the best legs to stand on, especially not when he just chose to rename it Bad Cinderella. Not the wisest call, my dude.
Yeah, it's like that. And then also Cameron McIntosh and the producers at the really useful group who make a lot of these decisions too. And that things that are done ultimately in the interest of money and just trying to scrape money. And at the end of the day, like the people who usually get dunked on are the people that are the visible ones that are in this show and have to deal with
such
the
bullshit.
Yeah.
I always get really angry when I, not just in this show, but just in anything of movies or franchises and stuff where people are like really upset. They like get really pissed off at the fucking actors for some reason. Where I'm like, dude, like, You know, unless they're doing something like obviously egregious, but it's like, no, you're mad at producers and fucking companies for putting something like this out that you don't like. It's not the actor's fault. It's not the fucking people who are like, do it, the sort of ones who are doing the work.
Absolutely.
So real quick, let's do a recap.
Sure.
Obviously, if you don't know the story of Cinderella, it's pretty obvious, but with slight changes, Cinderella is the story of, you guessed it,
Cinderella.
Only this, this time she's bad.
She's so bad. So she's it bad. Opens in the... She's bad. Yeah, she's got a red leather jacket. She's got a green leather jacket, but it's like, you know, the leather jacket carries
That's the second worst color. That's the second baddest jacket that you can have.
Yeah, exactly. It's just right down after red. But so it opens in the kingdom of Belleville, where everyone is really obsessed with being really hot. And we open to see that the statue of Prince Charming has been defaced, decrying everyone's, the whole town, I should say, we mentioned this in the beginning, is obsessed with being beautiful. And the statue that was just...
As I said, Los Angeles, essentially. Right. Yes, don't forget. It's just literally LA. That's all it is.
We opened in Los Angeles. Pink Fairy is in chaos. the whole town of Belleville is in chaos because one, Prince Charming is gone, and two, like, the monument that was erected to him to bring in tourists partially is defaced, and everyone knows off the bat that it's Bad Cinderella. We meet Bad Cinderella. She's like, yeah, I did it, and I do it again, and she has her friend
remind me again real quick, what does she write to deface it? It's like something really not complex. It's for totally drawing a blank.
Hold on, I'll look it up.
It's
something really basic.
It's like in Spaceballs and Dark Helmet is like, because good is dumb, you know, like it's at that level. While Princess is doing that, I'll keep on with the plot here. So we meet Bette Cinderella, and she's got her one friend in the town who is the younger brother of Prince Charming, Princess Sebastian.
It reminds me of Calvin from Gemstones a little bit.
Oh yeah, I see that. Yeah, he's got Calvin from Righteous Gemstones energy. He's basically like kind of a dweeb and living in his brother's shadow. And now that his brother has disappeared mysteriously, the mother, the queen of Belleville, has turned her attention on him and getting him married. And of course, he's bookish and shy and the opposite of, you know, Prince Charming. And it's very clear off the bat that he and Cinderella like each other. Like, this needs to be established how very clear it is that the two of them are in each other, because it causes the dumbest plot conflict in the world. Like, these two like each other.
Painfully heterosexual.
It is painfully heterosexual and very like upfront about how there's like no mystery as to their feelings for each other. They are so into each other.
There's no room to grow.
No room to do anything.
No room to do anything whatsoever. We meet Cinderella's family. It's the usual deal. Mean, evil stepmother, played by Carolee Carmello, a Broadway legend who is carrying so much for this show. She was fantastic. She was my favorite part. And then the two stepsisters who are, you know, dumb, stupid, spoiled bitches, at least up front. That's how they're presented. It's like having no redemptive qualities to them whatsoever. It's Cinderella, but it's bad.
In
every way. But basically, there's like this scene where the queen and Cinderella's stepmother meet, and they have like this weird, not funny song that like never kind of gets us... It never elevates whatever this joke is, which is that
she's trying to blackmail her, essentially.
Yeah, they're both hoes.
Like, I knew you used to work in the red light district or something.
Right.
Yeah.
The joke is that they both used to be hoes. And this is a town where everyone is obsessed with being hot and like sex. So I'm like, I don't see like the issue here.
It looks like a win to me, honestly. I was just like...
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone would be okay with this. But somehow in this, I'm forgetting like what this has of significance to the plot. It's just like,
I can fill it. So yeah, essentially, like,
thank you.
So because they want to do the wedding plot, evil stepmother wants her daughter to marry the son, but then she's there during the stupid ballad. So she knows that Sebastian is
There are so fucking many of them.
The one where they're both kind of being like tee hee hee in the forest the first time. So
So
she sees that and she's like, absolutely not. So she's like, listen, your son is into my daughter and my stepdaughter. And the queen at first is like, oh, that's great. We can monetize this. This could be great content.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
She's literally the Kris Jenner of this kingdom.
Truly. Right. The stepmother is like, awesome. But if you do that, I'll tell everybody that used to be turning tricks on the streets. And then they're like, okay, well, I guess then we'll lie about something really dumb.
That okay, thank you. Thank you. Because I was like, I was forgetting. I was like, what was the significance of this besides I don't know and I don't care? There's also a song just about how hot Prince Charming was and how magnificent he was and just how everyone
sung
really,
by
really
his mother,
him.
Which is what's really weird about
yes.
it. Yeah.
That's fairy tales for you.
Right, exactly.
I totally wanted to bang my son. Here's a song about how hot he was.
Yeah, it's sung by his mom and a bunch of shirtless men, and it's probably one of the better moments in the show, but that's besides the point. So the ball's coming, and Cinderella all of a sudden feels like really inadequate about herself, even though this was never an issue before, and like she's like worried that Prince Sebastian won't choose her, and so she decides to basically go and do like ha 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 ho 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 and a couple of tra la las at the fairy godmother equivalent, who's like this plastic surgeon witch type thing that like is never, she's never really established as a character. She's just kind of there, and it's like very tonally weird and creepy. And she gives Cinderella the most underwhelming makeover I've ever seen in my life. And then Cinderella shows up. She looks like, you pointed this out to me, and while we were watching it, you leaned over, you went, Elsa.
Yeah, she
Elsa,
has a second Elsa's
Frozen
fucking dress.
Two Elsa.
She had that Frozen 2 yeah. Elsa dress, and I was like, man.
Yeah.
And they gave her an ashy ass wig. It was very upsetting to me.
They gave her the worst wig, and it was just kind of like, you know those moments, like, cause it's kind of a popular like trope in theater to have like, especially as of the last 15 years, to have like a really fun magnetic costume quick change reveal. And so like for example, the Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella that was yeah. from like 10 years ago had that, and like everyone's like, oh my god, the moment, and like they built to this big moment of transformation, and yeah, she just shows up in like this Jessica McClintock by way of Elsa 2 fantasy that is just so underwhelming, but it makes her the hottest person in town ostensibly. So she shows up at the ball, and like Prince Sebastian's already like annoyed at having to do all this stuff, and you know the sisters are trying to get up with him, and he sees Cinderella, but he doesn't recognize that it's her, and like she's supposed to textually look so unrecognizable that this is understandable.
It's like Clark Kent. She took her glasses off, and she's no longer she's right. now the hot librarian. Like,
she's
like
just
now
blind.
She's like beautiful.
Yeah,
yeah, she's right. all that.
And then she immediately gets mad at him, even though she goes out of her way to like change herself, and then like. He was upfront about like pretty much liking you and liking you as you are. And you didn't ever feel mm-hmm. the need to feel changed until like suddenly last minute. And now you're mad at each other. And then there's this contrivance where if he kisses somebody before midnight, that's who he has to marry. And he ends up kissing
it's
one
like
of Cinderella's stepsisters.
Right. It's like, this is a patriarchy. Like, what do you mean he has to do anything? I mean, shut up, mom.
Can't take it back.
Leave right. me alone, mom. Right. I'm the king.
He doesn't have to do, but then he goes like, he's all like, I'm Mr. Serious now because yeah. I don't get what I want. And that's, yeah. And you know, he's no more fun. He's no more Mr. like sweet book charming. He's like, I'm the mm-hmm. going to be the king now, you know, that kind of person. And then that's basically act one ended with the makeover.
One ends with the makeover, oh, yeah. and then act two begins with literally just Masquerade, the song.
Yeah. That was also a note just, I think that yeah. Princess had too.
Yeah.
Oh, you're like, Masquerade. Yeah.
Aren't you proud of me for knowing that?
I'm so
yes,
proud of you.
It starts with the Masquerade, and then it goes to all the stuff you're talking about. And then essentially it goes to the wedding because he has to marry this lady. All this other stuff happens. And then the wedding is interrupted with Prince Charming returning.
The best moment in the yeah. whole and goddamn show.
As a matter of fact, yes.
Yes.
Literally the whole time where you're like, why wasn't this the entire show?
Because
this is clearly what the most interesting part of it was.
Because that was the most fun, like, 15 minutes of a show that I'd yes. seen in a while. And I was enjoying myself immensely during it. So, yeah, Prince Charming shows up. And, like, the song
stupid
that they sing
hot.
In the first act about him being, about how hot he is, you're sitting there going, like, how hot could this guy possibly be? Like, come on. And then, like, reader, they found the guy that could play that
listen,
part.
This
and
is
he
the leanest
just,
motherfucker I've ever
listen,
seen. His yeah, shoulders are just, like, unreal. This man is not human. He is superhuman. He's, like, a Greek
yes,
god.
Yes, amazing. Yes. I, like, literally, it was the role was, like, it was the three of us all together, like you, me, and Lindsay, yeah. and we're just all like, oh my God. Like, we're like,
losing
so
our
good.
Minds collectively. And so it's revealed yes. that he ran away because he's in love with a guy and he didn't want to have to get married. And that's why he disappeared. But now he's here, he's queer, and he's got another equally hot boyfriend.
He doesn't
and
want
so
any
like
more
this,
bears.
Exactly.
And then the queen is like, this is great. And she just leans yeah. into it. And she's like, fuck yeah.
She's like, fan
and then, so
fiction
she's like, let's celebrate. This is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Yes. And then it's fun for a minute and you're like, oh, I didn't expect that. And then it becomes this like hilarious different thing that you would not have. Then it becomes a different Cinderella story.
Yeah. And it's so much fun and it's really affirming and just kind of a thing that, you know, it feels good to see. And like the song itself is really fun. The cast energy is like at 500. Prince Charming is literally making his pecs dance. This man is perfect. Like, wherever they found this man, he can, like, literally do it all. He can sing, he can dance, he can make his titties jiggle, and he looks literally like a Greek god.
Gorgeous.
And you're like, wait, this is great. This is rules. I wish this was the show. And then we have to get back to, like, Cinderella.
And the best part is, like, he arrives with, like, this, like, wolf coat thing looking like the lost child. Right, I'm just like, yeah. Oh my god, we would have won the war if he had just been there.
I know. Just wearing leggings and that. And it is everything you've ever
boyfriend. I'm just like, God.
Oh, it's so
and
good.
And then they become Cuban in the last song.
Yes, that's right. They all become Cuban and then like everyone's like doing like salsa and it's great and I love it. And then the story has to go back to being about Cinderella again. And Cinderella is like basically going to skip town at this point. But one of the stepsisters is like, I actually hate my mom too. And I hate all this too. And like, I don't want to see you miserable, which is like, you know, very convenient for like the last quarter of the show.
That and moment was very weird. She's very like, why weren't you nice to me even though I tried to destroy you every day? You're selfish for not thinking about like that maybe I'm a person. She's
It's not like an Ever After where the Melanie Lisinski sister is like sympathetic from the beginning and you're like, okay, it makes sense that she would turn and help Cinderella, blah, 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 blah. It's just kind of like, well, the story needs this. So here we go. There's a lot of ballads and then it's fine.
So
like, that's like, I'm not missing any major plot detail here.
There's
like,
none.
The mom is not going to give Cinderella the house. She's going to be like, fine, I'm going to go out in the big wide world. But then she sees the prince and they reaffirm their love for each other and they are happy.
Well, here's the one thing that's weird.
Wait.
There's one weird thing that happens. It's like, so during the whole fairy godmother, plastic surgeon, repo, genetic opera shit, she gives her necklace to the fairy godmother. Like, it's my mother's.
Then
Sebastian's walking around. The fairy godmother is there. And she's just like, hey, you want this necklace? Because this is your girlfriend's. Here you go. The stakes are literally in hell. Like, it's like, why was I important then? You didn't even have to exchange anything. It was ridiculous.
It was a plant and a payoff, princess.
Yeah, we did a thing in the first act, and now it's here in the second act. Aren't you really impressed by that?
It's called screenwriting.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I forgot Chekhov's necklace.
Right. I forgot about it, too, because it means absolutely not. It has absolutely zero to do with anything that matters in the show, even though there's kind of like all this buildup around it in the first act. Like, this is my mother's necklace. Blah, 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 blah. Like, but it never really means anything. It's like Pocahontas' mother's necklace, which has symbolic weight. This one does not. But
it is torn asunder. Yes.
It is torn asunder. So that's basically Bad Cinderella. That's the plot of Bad Cinderella. I don't think I'm missing anything else. There's just like a lot of really, I think we might have touched upon this, but like this show doesn't know what it wants to be. And that is like, as we've said, when you get to like the big wedding and even like the man's man song, which for me was the best part of act one, where it just is silly and campy and goofy and understands how those things work, then it's a lot of fun. But for a lot of it is just like either really long, boring ballads or it's just really mean humor like that doesn't quite land. Like, oh, what? There's like something I remember. We turned and we gasped at each other. But there's like a moment where Carolee Carmello says something to Bad Cinderella that is so shockingly mean, and we were like, "Whoa!"
There was one part where where they're talking to each other, and she's like, "The only thing you taught me how to be is a massive bitch." And I was just like, "Girl," I looked at you. I was like, "Girl, 2000 is late." It's just like, I truly cannot believe that like Emerald Fennell put her pen to paper and was like, here, a story by me. It's just so trite. And like, I recently just rewatched Ever After, and I'm just like, it was over for these hoes. It was just never going to happen because like, you can't outdo all of this. Like, there's nothing good here besides the sexy twink and hot gay Prince Charming. And I'll even give the thotty queen, she can even stay. But the rest of it, what a waste. What a waste of like a premise.
my daughter is really into Ever After right now. I got her started on that. Like she doesn't know what it's called. She calls it Bad Cinderella. She was like, "Can we watch Bad Cinderella?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "The one where the mother calls her bad." And I was like, "Do you mean Ever After?" Like I was like, "The one with the live action people that doesn't have songs." Like I'm trying to parse out which Cinderella she's talking about because she has never seen Bad Cinderella. I'm like, "Are you talking about the cartoon one or the one that has Impossible?"
She just heard you talk about it so much.
Yeah, she's like, "It's bad. Can we watch Bad Cinderella?" Which is now how I know what she means by Ever After, because she's really into Ever After right now. And again, does not, they really did kind of like put the bar up pretty high there in terms of Cinderella retellings. But having watched it again after watching Bad Cinderella, it is just like they really didn't have anything interesting to say about Cinderella. Because as we've said, Cinderella is not a story about am I hot enough or socially acceptable enough. You know, it's not. Mm-hmm. The conflict, but that is the conflict here. And that's the conflict between her and Prince Sebastian, even though it's not a conflict for them until it absolutely must be. Sorry, it's a frustrating
show,
weird.
I mean, even to compare it to like the Cinderella that came out in 2021, the Camila Cabello one which also was dog shit, but at least it understood the foundational premise of what a Cinderella movie. Like literally I turned to you and I was like, "I'm so sorry, Camila Cabello, I take it back." You at least understood the singular assignment of doing a Cinderella
Was that like a Disney live action one that they did?
It was an Amazon Prime movie.
It
was by the person who did Pitch Perfect. It was like a jukebox musical. It was like India Menzel, Minnie Driver, Billy Porter.
Tonight Show guy.
Corden.
James Corden.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
King amongst men. Yeah.
It was quite garbage, but I will say it was a much better Cinderella retelling at least than this was, which the bar is low. So, Yeah.
It was just really embarrassing to like, at least with that one, the whole thing was like, "Oh, she wants to design dresses. She wants to be an entrepreneur." Stupid, but whatever. I'll let it go. But like with this, I think the fundamental thing that I hated about this musical is that like the songs felt like B-sides. Yes. And it's like Cinderella is so iconic that you brought nothing to the table. This is a story that's been retold and told for like literally hundreds of years across every single culture. And this is the best you can give us. This is it.
Mm-hmm. And then you call it bad. And then like, how dare you? How dare you?
And then it's his most diverse cast from the jump. You know, it's not like later. Yeah. It's like, so you have like the first Latina to ever open up one of his little shows and it's dog shit. You see, this is why we can't ask representation.
Yeah,
it's the
monkey's
paw every time. Like, I want more diversity
setting
in Broadway.
Setting us up for failure.
No.
This is what you
don't
get.
Ask for shit.
Yeah, don't hope for anything because it's probably going to get, exactly, monkey's paw. You are going to get the, like, most clumsy iteration of it. And, clumsy is it. And I feel bad because, like, everything about this just from beginning to end, like, from the London cast finding out that the show was closing via Twitter to also there was, like, a thing that happened with the announcement for this show closing that Playbill accidentally posted it about, like, 2 hours before, like several hours before the news was supposed to break. They posted, like, their graphic, like, that they had in the, you know, chamber that Bad Cinderella was closing. Oh, and I have to assume, like, it probably was not a great experience for people in the show and did not help anything with easing this message. So it's just a mess all around. And
total, how long is it on for? It's like less than 9 months or something, right? 7-8 months?
Not even. It opened for previews in March. Or February, rather.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it opened in November. March. I forgot.
No.
I oh, Jesus. Is that like one of the shortest runs ever?
It's not one of the shortest runs ever, but it's pretty short. Like that's damn. A woof. And yeah, just even watching like the audience capacity numbers just kind of like not have themselves, but go down by like, you know, 10-15% each week is rough. And again, I feel for the cast and the crew and the front of house staff who have to be the ones to bear the brunt of this. Because yeah, it's not so much that this is like, I've seen bad shows. Like I saw Dracula, I saw Lestat, where they were kind of a mess and, but you know, memorable, but this is just like, you know, it just felt like really careless and clumsy and not anything to do with a cast who is trying their hardest in the pit.
I also think a lot of it has to do with how it's split into two, right? I think a lot of what he tried to do was like make the first half of it super cliche and boring. I mean, I guess the best possible interpretation, I should say. I don't actually know if this is what he was doing. My understanding of it was I think he was trying to do something where like the first half of it is everything you expect and setting it up, which is part of why it was so confusing, because I was like, this is terrible. And then, you know, as a way to really punch up the reversal that happens when the prince, when Prince Charming comes back, and then it like flips into this other thing, but he doesn't fully commit to it. And there's no meaning, like there is like that, like you said, about 10, 15 minutes where it's truly like bizarre and fun and like flipped on its ear and it's like a different thing. And it's kind of interesting in a way that like, I mean, I was going to ask you guys too. I'm like, I obviously have not watched any other Cinderellas other than like the old Disney one, but like, I don't think I've seen, is that like a, that's not like a thing that's been done in like a mainstream show to have it just be like, hey, I'm a gay dude, by the way. And I left and I'm basically like Richard Lionheart and he comes back. Right. That's not like a thing that's been done to that scale, has it? Like you said, it's fan fiction-y, but
no.
To see it like on a big Broadway show, like that's kind of a, like a deal, right? Like that's kind of a bigger deal than you would expect.
It would have been cooler for me if Andrew Lillifer wasn't just like a massive Tory. And so it just,
right.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that about him. Right.
No. It's fun. I think like, I love that part of it. I thought it was super cool. I think it's also telling that it's in the second act and like literally like by the time that part happens, I remember looking at the play, but I'm like, oh, the show is over. There's like technically only one song that happens after that. It's just like seven really annoying songs at once. And I think it was disappointing about the fact that we have like, again, like the queerness and the diversity of the show is that like, it all feels like it's manufactured to meet the moment that we are right now with Broadway musicals, where so many of them are very like queer facing, very feminist facing, or like trying to like rediscover something. Cause you think about like Some Like It Hot right now, which is out, like how it's trying to deal with queerness and tackling racial issues. Like I feel like, even the things I like about this thing feel very much this was created in a blender to get marketing done to teens to get them to watch this. But unfortunately for him, they could watch the 7-time nominated Anne Juliet.
There you go. So, there you go. There's something out
which
there.
Which has queer stuff at the very beginning.
It very much is like, well, I think this is what the kids will like, you know, doing it. Like, well-meaning, but zero interest in actually, like, doing it in a way that feels like, yeah, just not pandering to teenagers for all the worst reasons. And like, again, because the stuff that is fun is what is really good about the show. And that's what's so fucking tragic about it. I agree with that assessment 100%. It very much is trying to be the moment. And, you know, I part of it is just like, what, how do you relate to this when you are like a 70 something Tory old British man? And there's things about Andrew Lloyd Webber where, you know, he means really well and wants to do right by changing times. And that's kind of been an ethos that's been in a lot of his shows and just in his work in general. But like, it ultimately just like there's the center cannot hold. There is a threshold where like one, he's just not going to get that. Like your time has passed. And I don't mean that you have to stop making things, but like it's going to be hard for you to kind of be the moment when the moment, you know, is 40 years gone. But also, like, well, intentions are everything. But, you know, again, all the fun stuff, all the stuff that's really cool about it is more just background dressing to a really bad show. A bad show, just a bad show. Just a confusing show.
The Prince feels like the Rum Tum Tugger taken to its natural conclusion,
yes!
Which is like, just like,
yeah,
excellent. No,
yeah, you already gave us, I was going to say, you already gave us perfect queer representation. No. You gave us Rum Tum Tugger and Mr. Mistopheles. And then you went back and changed it in the 2019 movie. How dare you?
That's why we can't trust him. But no, I definitely feel like that's the thing that's so interesting. Like there's so much new young talent that's doing really well right now.
It sort of
feels like, you know, like when Scorsese makes a new movie, you feel like he's going to really push the envelope, like whether you like it or not. You know it's gonna be excellent to a certain degree. That's not what you're gonna get with Andrew Lloyd Webber. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He's got a Ridley Scott reputation. It's like some greatness, a lot of bullshit. And you never know which one you're gonna get, you know?
Right.
A Scorsese, he is ner. So
no. that's a really good counter to Andrew Lloyd Webber, someone who has maintained like a level of, for lack of a better word, goodness, throughout their very long career as they get older and understanding, you know, the times change and that they got to put their whole nut into it if they want to actually make something that people are going to respond to. Unless it's something like Love Never Dies, which is tattooed on my soul for the rest of my life.
That's his B-sides on his own, like, fan fiction, right. Which is, like, totally fine. I think, like, in a world where Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella wasn't, like, literally a tour de force, like, even if you don't love it, like, made Cinderella on Broadway like a thing. It's like, if you're not going to be as good as that, then just leave us alone.
Why would he even choose Cinderella is the question, right? Like, what is it that he thought that he could bring to it? Do you think it was just all like reverse engineered is what you guys are saying?
Honestly, I think it is that like reverse engineering things to make the story cool and appeal to teens, even though, again, this is why I say he's an old guy. People have been making Cinderella for young women countless hundreds of thousands of times. And I just think it's like the first idea that pops into his head and people won't tell him no, as is often the case with him lately. You know, like he's just like, I'll do Cinderella for the kids, not knowing that the kids have had many a Cinderella, you know, and many of them being quite good.
Do you think this is like a career killer to have something like this happen?
No, I don't think so. I think he'll be fine. Really? I think Angela Edweber will be totally fine.
He'll just be able to keep putting on shows, even though it's like insane how quickly it closed and it was a disaster and
that's the other thing, the sad thing about like with all this young talent that is out there actually doing like songwriting and creating new shows, they're the ones that are going to have to struggle and keep earning their spot at the table. But Angela Edweber is so wealthy, so established that I think this man can keep on doing whatever he wants to do up until infinity. And the real thing is he's probably just going to bring back Phantom again. Like, you already see it now with some of the international productions and the U.S. restage tour, which was one of the worst things I've seen. And I love Phantom. But, that's also kind of also getting into Cameron Mack and not necessarily Angela Edweber, his main producer. But so the long and short of it is Angela Edweber, I think, will be fine. Like, this is just another he's had a kind of like, outside of School of Rock, you know, kind of had a really rough run of it and does fine and still gets to make things. And I cannot state how wealthy and well-connected this man is. Same with Cameron Mackintosh. So they will be fine. And I am sad for the cast because that's going to be work for them. You know, that is their careers that are constantly going to be in question. You know, Broadway actors do not make a lot of money. You know, most do not. So this is a scramble for them, but he will be fine.
To your other part about like why Cinderella, I think the how he first did it in London kind of says it itself because it's like it's Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella and it's like it was Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cinderella. I think it was him trying to be like, I'm going to take what that show did to like 50s classical fairy tale aesthetic and I'm going to remix it and revamp it with my own touch and take basically like he was trying to make like a Phantom-esque, like because when Phantom came out, As you know from all your history, so now you're a Phantom historian now, is that like how it like just
against my will
flipped the script on like what a thing could look like. He was trying to do that with Bad Cinderella, connecting it to Rodgers and Hammerstein, like they're in conversation with each other, except his is bad. And I think he did promise that though. Yeah, he did.
This is true.
Like the entire time I was thinking like if he had done Snow White, this would have been more interesting. If he had done Sleeping Beauty, it would have been more interesting. If he had done like any other fairy tale where like beauty is like the 12 Dancing Princesses. That would have been like an amazing fairy tale punk rock thing you could have done. They could all have their own little song. Yeah. He could have had 12 girls dancing on that stage, but he wanted to do it for the clout of doing a Cinderella adaptation. That's what I think, because everything about the story in the book, it could have been any other fairy tale besides Cinderella. Like, it's not specific at all.
Yeah, now that you say Sleeping Beauty, I'm like, Bad Sleeping Beauty probably would have ripped. Like, the themes that they were trying to go for that, like, you actually do have a thing that gets in the way of the prince in Sleeping Beauty. Like, there's, like, natural stuff to throw at that. And it also has the beauty theme in there. But no, it has to be. Well, Rodgers and Hammerstein did Cinderella, so I could do Cinderella, too.
All I'm saying is, like, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella is sort of what he wanted to see, like, on the poster.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like, I guess like people were pointing this out from like the moment the soundtrack job, but how much the Bad Cinderella song, which comes shockingly early, you would think that's like a second act, like reaffirming like song, but like nah, she sings who she is. She's Bad Cinderella. It sounds like my own little corner from Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, and everyone's like, well, fuck you too. Right. Like as you said, Phantom was in direct conversation with how it's always been a horror story, and Andrew Lloyd Webber's like, I'm gonna make it an '80s new romantic goth musical about my wife, so suck on that, flip the script. But like there's no script flipped here. Nothing was flipped. I guess some nipples were dancing, but that's not quite enough to take you there.
Gays anywhere now, thank god.
Exactly. It's 2023.
On your local street corner, you're just like, there it is, a local gay.
Okay, so that about probably does it for Bad Cinderella, unless you guys have any parting thoughts of anything else. Seems like we've said all that there is to be said.
I do want to say, you know, like all of my congrats to the cast and crew and staff for, you know, carrying this show in the face of everything. And there was a lot of stuff that I did enjoy about it, interspersed through all of like the mess that it was. But yeah, closing June 4th, there's a part of me that was like, well, tickets are $30 and I have to go up to see a couple of other shows for this podcast.
Might as well
go see Bad Support Cinderella and cast. See her off. Support that cast as best as you can. Mm-hmm. And if you want to see a piece of weird history, because this is going to end Andrew Lloyd Webber's like streak of having a show running on Broadway since Evita opened.
Oh, that's
like,
true. You're right.
Yeah.
Huh?
So it's just, it's a very interesting and weird way for that spree to end, especially like with Phantom being spanning almost all of that and then just cutting that off about, you know, mm-hmm. a week before the show or a month before the show is canceled. But yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
Princess, last thoughts.
Sorry to them. I really enjoyed all the acting. You know, I think they all did a great job, but I'm also just, you know, I'm here for Lorna Courtney, for Anne Juliet. Congratulations, girl. She's from Queens, went to LaGuardia. Like, again, like this musical made me so excited for all the young talent that is coming out and all the weird stuff that we've been doing and seeing like more of that. We don't need any more bad Cinderellas.
Agreed. There's enough bad stuff going on in the world. We need good Cinderellas.
Good Cinderella. Yes. Great Cinderella.
Yeah.
The only thing I disagreed with you guys on was I did think that the Fairy Godmother set was cool. It reminded me of like a Terry Gilliam movie.
I thought the set was cool. I just thought the tone of it was very strange and weird. Like
it was weird, but I kind of liked the horror-y part of it. I was like, oh, that's weird because everything else just was bad.
Boring. Yeah, yeah.
Not
obviously, it's
yet.
Marketed as, again, you can't really criticize this because it just keeps saying like, yeah, it's bad. They're like, we fucking told you it's bad. Yeah. And those weird like ghost ladies that were like standing static. It kind of reminded me of whatchamacallit too, of All That Jazz, you know, when he's like in the afterlife talking to Jessica, like it sort of had that feel to it. I actually really liked that set and I liked those costumes and I liked that section of it. And I thought it was kind of interesting where she's like you said, the plastic surgery kind of angle to it, I thought was kind of fun as like a way, instead of just being like pure fantasy of like, I'm going to wave my wand and then bop, and then you change into something, but turning it into something a little bit more practical, like you're, you know, shortening her legs or chopping this part of her up. Like I thought that was, there was something there that was fun that I would have liked to have seen more, but.
Yeah. Cause then obviously. They reverse it. It's reversed immediately. Right, like right, it'll all fade at midnight.
Really,
so it's kind of like, well, what was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you're like, the Fairy Godmother is kind of this weird fucking demon showing up almost. You're like, okay, I'm like, that's kind of weird. That's kind of cool. I liked that part of it.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
But the rest of it, yeah, whatever. And then, of course, we all agreed that the Prince Charming returning was fun. But anyway, overall.
Good luck to him.
Good luck to him. We're going to see that guy, hopefully, in more stuff.
I'll see him wherever he goes.
Whatever Sondheim show, I'm not mad if there's like dancing pecs in it. You find a way. Just make it happen. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Prince in Agony. Oh my God. If they hadn't already done a revival of Into the Woods, I've been like, that's Prince Charming.
No, that's like that character was those characters from like, so for those of you who have not seen it, it is the princes from Into the Woods on like meth. Like it is just like cranked, like to taken to like the most extreme logical conclusion those characters could be. It's fantastic. If we keep talking about it, it's because he's just that good. Go see it for him. But yeah, that's all my final
thoughts. Anyway, you guys, you've got until June 4th to see this show. If you see it or if you have seen it, let us know your thoughts. We are at musicalsplaining with no G on Twitter, at musicalsplaining with a G on Instagram. I'm at Kavitarian on Twitter and at PermaFriends on Instagram. Princess, tell us where everyone can find you and what you're working on and what you got in the pipeline coming up.
Working on a video about The Last Duel because that's where my mind is at. I am on Twitter at Weeks Princess. You can find me on YouTube as Princess Weeks. And I also am on Twitch as P. Wiggles. So just because.
Wiggles.
Wiggles. Yeah.
Mix it up.
That was a nickname from my friend Pat.
Nice.
But thank you guys so much for having me and talking about this very weird.
Thank you for coming.
Oh my
we
God.
Absolutely
anytime.
Had to have you for this especially. Yes. But yes, thank you so much for joining us. I am Y Angelina Y on Twitter. Probably going to be Bad Angelina at some point because you know what? It's been a month. I'm
you
ready
should
for
be
a character
bad.
Change.
We should all change our handles to Bad. Who
yes.
Are
yes, I can do it. I can be Bad Princess Weeks. So I can
musical splaining.
Love it so bad. We're Bad Musical Splaining. Yes, but Y Angelina Y on Twitter. I am Angelina on Angelina underscore SEE on Instagram, and I'm just here talking shit.
like I know things about theater. But yeah, thanks again for joining us. Go out in the world and be a little bit bad.
Yeah, don't forget, you guys, we still are, we're still selling merch. Go ahead and check that out on our Nebula store. We got bags, we got pins. We also got our Patreon. Don't forget to sign up for that, where we do exclusive live streams and stuff like that, maybe little mini episodes here and there. And of course, the fun story that Angie's been writing and I've been illustrating. So go ahead and check that out. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We will see you at the theater on the next one. Princess, thanks again.
Thanks again. Bye.